Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today is our road test editor, Zach Palmer. How you doing, man?
Not too bad. It's finally starting to look like winter out there, it seems. We've had a pretty mild one so far, but maybe it's time for some winter activities, finally.
I think so. It's I've only shoveled maybe once before this winter, and I wasn't even sure I really needed to because it melted pretty quickly afterwards. But it's about time. There's only about 5 days left in January. So let's jump right in. We've got some great cars to talk about. Zach, you've been driving most of them. The Volkswagen Arteon, the Kia K5, the Acura MDX, and then we'll do another quick Acura TLX update as I continue to navigate winter here in our long-termer, our newest long-termer. We'll talk some news here about the Xterra coming back, some news out of Lotus, and then maybe a couple other things if there's time. So let's jump right in. The Arteon, I've always found to be an interesting car for Volkswagen. They've dabbled in some higher-end models, like the CC, I always thought was memorable, beautiful car. The Phaeton, going back a little bit, cars that were beautiful that didn't sell, really. But the Arteon is sort of their, I think, opportunity to make it maybe a little bit more accessible, but still it's a pretty good-looking car. They didn't do a ton as far as the updates, but just enough to kind of keep it fresh. You drove this back, actually, a few weeks ago. Thoughts? What do you think?
Yeah, the Arteon is a weird one, I must say. You know, it's one of those cars that that really feels like it would play well in Europe, but just sort of hit with the wrong timing here in the U.S. Whereas when somebody wants to spend $45,000-$50,000 on a car, nowadays they're buying a crossover. You know, they're buying a Volkswagen Tiguan or Volkswagen Atlas, and that has really been the Achilles heel of the Arteon so far. They really haven't sold many of them at all. Just a couple thousand, few thousand per year, which not great when you're talking about a mid-sized sedan, you know, sort of about the same size as a Honda Accord or any mid-sized sedans like those. But just like you said, Volkswagen has updated it this year, and it's still the same basic car, the same premise. But I think that they've sweetened the deal by making it a little bit more premium. The interior is really where they spent most of their time on. It was priced in that budget Audi range before, but now it really looks and feels like a budget Audi in there. You have all the big touch haptic controls. How Audi has their dual touch screens with most of their new cars. Well, this is sort of like a quasi dual touch screen approach in the center stack again. And you have some really great ambient lighting. You can choose from 30 different colors. The whole dash gets a redesign that makes it look a lot more premium. Before, it just sort of looked like a semi gussied up Passat, which just isn't great, you know, when you're charging $10,000-$15,000 more than a Passat. And they even went the whole touch haptic route in the steering wheel too, which I actually found to be pretty useful, unlike the Mercedes touch haptic steering wheel that I recently tried out in the new E-Class. That thing was just impossible to use from a like an ease of use standpoint, but in the Arteon, there's a nice combination of touch haptic feedback and actual physical controls there that feels right and is not distracting to the road. So that's about it on the inside. On the outside, they did one design thing that I think really makes a difference, is that they've extended the DRLs all the way into the center. So it's almost like there's a front shield on the car of light. And it looks luxurious, it doesn't, look like a cheap Volkswagen or anything like that. And the design really, I think, is the number one thing with the Arteon, like why somebody might buy it, is the thing is just so pretty. There's maybe only like one or two sedans that I think, sort of get up to that level right now. And, one of them is the Kia Stinger GT, which is this car's main competition being a hatchback, and really I think the Kia Stinger is its biggest problem too, because You know, instead of giving us the Volkswagen Arteon R like Europe gets, a performance version, you know, we still stick with the standard Arteon that has 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder, 268 horsepower, front-wheel drive standard, all-wheel drive available. And the car is just, well, it's just not very sporty. It's, you know, your typical just boulevard cruiser, very comfortable, very sedate. It's not particularly quick. It doesn't handle particularly well. It's just sort of, you know, good. Whereas you can buy a Kia Stinger or a Kia Stinger GT for just about the same price. And that thing is a roaring sports sedan, way, way more fun than the Arteon. You know, I think that price issue, you know, when you're looking at $45,000-ish, I mean, I was tracking these things back before the update, like sort of what kind of discounts they were going for. And, you know, you could find scads of them on Auto Trader and dealer lots for upwards of $10,000 off the sticker. And, you know, at $35,000, I think that the car really starts to become, you know, something that you should consider. It's something that's a great value buy. But, you know, it its highest trims, like the one that I tested, the one that I drove was about $48,000. You know, at that price, it is just really, really tough to actually recommend this when you can have a car that's comfortable, fast, a premium interior, all that hatchback utility in the Kia Stinger. The Arteon just, you know, falls flat as this sort of Volkswagen enthusiast, design enthusiast vehicle. And, you know, it's just sort of like floating out there. You mentioned the Phaeton right off the top, and that's a car that's, weirdly endeared to my heart. My mom actually daily drove one of those when I was growing up. My dad bought one used, traded his C5 Corvette for it. You know, this was after they hit the crazy depreciation, because those things were over $100,000 new. But you know, those sold, I think its best year ever, sold about 2,000 of them. And you know, that was somewhat solid proof that people didn't really want to pay a ton of money for a Volkswagen, you know, a car with a Volkswagen badge on it. Obviously the Arteon is on a whole another level of, you know, it's way cheaper than a Phaeton, but it's still, you know, playing as that flagship piece that, you know, people would just rather have an Atlas at $50,000 if you're just going to buy a car that, you know, is not especially fun or especially, you know, this special piece. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you think about the Arteon, Greg?
Well, I'll say this. Earlier today in Slack, we were talking about how the Kia K900 and the Cadenza are donezo. I just have a feeling at some point we're going to be having a discussion about how the Arteon is donezo. It just, even though that may be sounding cynical, because the car is lovely, I agree with everything you said. I just don't really think there's a really solid spot for it. I think pricing is tricky, even though tricky is, it's like reasonable. When you look at the average price of a new car is like around 41, 45 for all the stuff you get. And for a car that looks like this is actually a pretty good deal. I would wager you get more on this than you do like your average Mercedes in that price point. So, you know, there's definitely some things going for it. Let me put it that way. But I don't really think the buyer frankly exists. You know, I mean, there's, like, sedans are a tricky proposition right now. And I think if you're looking for a sedan in this price point and you want it to have some of a premium, you know, a bit of a premium or luxury feel, you're just looking at like something else. You know, it's not a Volkswagen. You're going to the Acura store. You're looking maybe even at Genesis. You're seeing maybe how much you can sort of slide into a Mercedes, you know, for that price point, maybe make some compromises if you're trying to stick to a budget. So to me, it's sort of like a, you know, a car without really a market, you know, and I think it's really tricky as auto journalists, because we always are talking about how much we love sedans, but then we tend to criticize these, like, you know, really like good efforts that are put forth. But I mean, it's tough, you know, Ford killed basically all of its sedans. The Impala's gone. You know, those are larger cars, but I mean, it's still, it's a very challenging proposition to find an audience because usually you've got to either be luxurious or sporty. Just like sort of nice and premium and kind of expensive, it's a little too ubiquitous, it's a little too nebulous. It's pick your adjectives and your superlatives. This one just seems like it's going to get kind of lost in the shuffle. Although I agree with your assessment, it sounds like a perfectly lovely car. I have no issues with the car itself.
Yeah.
So that's, we'll see.
That's the toughest thing is like the car is legitimately good. And, you know, it just is not finding any homes there. You know, you could buy an A5 Sportback, which is, you know, a very, very similarly sized, you know, just a little bit smaller, but also a hatchback, and it has an Audi badge on it, you know, for around the same price as, you know, a mid or top trim Arteon. What are people going to do when they go down to their local Volkswagen Audi dealer? You know, a lot of people are probably going to go for the Audi, even though you might get a few more, you know, features or tech things on the Volkswagen for a little bit cheaper. It's a tough argument to make for Volkswagen. And yeah, you might not be wrong about the whole not being long for the world thing. I really hope that it sticks around, and I wish that, you know, Volkswagen would really put some marketing shove behind it and put it in front of more people's faces. But the way of the world is the crossover right now, so I'm afraid it just might not work out.
For sure. And I think the thing too is VW has not quite made the transition like Volvo has, to a point where I think we as critics would say many Volvos are very premium feeling. When I look at Volkswagen, there's a whole slew of different things you can do. You can get a relatively cheap one, or you can like sort of scale up to something that's more expensive. And they're trying to be both, whereas a brand like Volvo isn't. And I would say even 10 years ago, they were a little bit closer together. You know, VW was obviously the namesake brand of this enormous company. You know, the identity wasn't really in question. Volvo looked like it might not even exist. And now it seems like, hey, Volvo, just because of their beautiful design and some of the risks they've taken with their powertrains, and of course safety, has been able to sort of secure that like prestige position. But that's a lot on a car that was basically a light refresh and we're not sure is going to exist much longer. Let's move along here to the K5. Speaking of sedans, hatchbacks, it's a very attractive car too, but I think this one's future and its prospects are a bit more promising. Did you do anything fun with the K5?
Yeah, so this is the Kia K5 GT. So it's the hot one. It's the one nice. That I've been, you know, pretty excited to drive this ever since I drove the standard K5 a few weeks ago. You know, that car was nice and all, but it had a 1.6 liter turbocharged 4-cylinder that, you know, just wasn't all that potent or special. It was just your run of the mill midsize family sedan. The GT, on the other hand, is rocking a 2.5-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder with an 8-speed dual-clutch automatic. Now, that automatically grabs my attention because, you know, there are not many, you know, non-luxury, non-premium vehicles out there that have an engine as big as that and as powerful as that. And I should mention 290 horsepower, 311 pound-feet of torque. That's better than the Accord 2-liter turbo. That's more than the Mazda 6 with its 2.5 turbocharged engine. It's some very, very good horsepower that the thing is producing. And I should also mention that the GT is not just an engine like some of those cars are. You know, it's also better suspension, better wheels. Obviously the 8-speed dual clutch transmission makes a big difference as well. And it's also design. You have, you know, there's a styling package that comes with it. The interior is a lot nicer, has much bigger bolsters on the seats. Overall, you know, the car is, you know, a properly sporty package that you get there. And first impressions are, this thing sort of reminds me of what the original Mazda Speed 3 was like, in that there is just a stupid amount of power going to those front wheels, and it's just sort of scratching around like a little puppy dog, can't get grip, there's tons of torque steer, and this thing, you know, it's a lot of fun. But, you know, it has that sort of good and bad side to it. And that, you know, right away I was like, oh man, this thing would be really, really good if it had a limited slip diff like the Veloster N. Because, you know, you're going along through a corner and, you know, as soon as you start getting on the throttle, boom, torque steer, it's yanking the wheel out of your hands. And, yeah, I mean, that's the pluses and minuses of sending that much power to the front wheels without, you know, doing a whole lot in to counteract those forces. You know, like everywhere I go, you know, you have to be super, super light on the throttle. Otherwise you're just going to do a front wheel burnout in this thing. It halfway reminded me of a Scat Pack in that just like instantly spins the tires all the time. Except obviously these are the front tires spinning, not the rear wheel spinning. The suspension upgrades I think were really well done. It's not too stiff, that it's uncomfortable as a daily driver at all. It's just enough to give it a little more sharper edge, when you're actually on a good road. But you know, when you're taking a highway trip or bouncing along a pretty bad city road, you know, it's not uncomfortable or anything. You know, you could, if you're getting out of like on a core 2-liter turbo sport and hopping into this, it's not like you're hopping into some like hardcore sports car or anything like that. I should also note that they are fixed dampers. It's not an adaptive damper system that you can switch between comfort and sport. The sport seats themselves, those are really good. I think that it's just the right amount of bolstering, you know, for daily driving. You know, you can slip in and out of the seats nicely, but it's not like you're climbing over anything, and it's really holding you in nicely when you do want to drive quickly. You know, and the appearance package, I think is good. They might have been able to go a little further with it. You know, it has these really nice quad exhaust tailpipes back there, and they look good. They're real. There's no fakery going on back there, which is nice to see as an enthusiast car. But you know, you get some Stinger vibes. I might just want a little bit more from it, especially with how quick it is. They claim 0-60 in 5.8 seconds. That is, you know, that's a good number. It's not like blow your socks off crazy fast. And I know I definitely haven't been able to hit that. Maybe in the warm, with some really, you know, prepared nice roads. But in the really cold winter driving we've been doing around here, there's just not enough grip. And honestly, this car could be a lot different than how I've described, and it's, you know, crazy, just torque steer all over the place, just because we are in such cold winter weather. So I would be curious to see how it drove, you know, on a nice 80 degree day. To see if, you know, I still think the same about it just being too much power to the front, for its own good. But, it's a riot. And, you know, if you're in the market for something like this, you know, you're thinking, Honda just dropped the manual in the Accord with the 2-liter turbo. Well, this thing has an 8-speed dual clutch transmission, and it shifts super quickly. It's obviously not three pedals, but it's better than what pretty much everybody else is doing with a slush box torque converter automatic that's quick-ish. But you know, this is more like a transmission from a BMW, like the ZF 8-speed, in that it responds pretty quickly to your commands. So all around, lots of fun. Could definitely be improved. It feels like it's, you know, sort of like middle of the way. It's like, really, it's like halfway leaning into the sport, halfway, you know, not completely going all the way in. But nonetheless, a really, really cool and interesting effort from Kia, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a good synopsis. And I think it's interesting, too, you mentioned some interesting competitors and just, you know, what I was kind of reading about this car ahead of time. It's drawing a lot of different comparisons, like even some favorable to the BMW 3 Series, which maybe is a stretch in some ways, but... to me, this is a really big step forward for Kia, considering that the K5 replaces the Optima, which was fine, you know, but to me, just even switching the name, it feels edgier, it feels cooler. It feels like they're trying to do something more ambitious. It's a beautiful car. It, you know, again, they took some risks with the design and with the powertrain, you know, options. Adding this GT line is, I think, very impressive, but I give them a ton of credit for that. You know, I kind of wonder, like, who exactly this buyer is, but on the other hand, this is like, this car seems so good to me that I feel like it will find its identity as this like enthusiast hatch that, you know, the Arteon that we were just discussing is probably going to struggle to find its spot in the market. So excited to drive the GT line. I think that is definitely the one that, you know, as enthusiasts we would be most into, I think. And yeah, I mean, to me, Kia has done a lot of good things for enthusiasts in the last 2-3 years. I mean, the Stinger, we loved it. We had a long-termer that was really impressive. You know, there were some issues, particularly with the interior, particularly as our year with it went on. But to your point, very good first effort. And same with this. Very good first effort. Not quite there, it sounds like, based on your impressions, but getting there. And you know, I'll also give Kia a lot of credit too for they're trying to really become an enthusiast brand. It's something they've been working on for the better part of a decade. You know, they got into racing. They've been trying to like make that a part of their pedigree, and it's not easy to do. I remember I was at a track just outside of Las Vegas about a few years back now, and Kia was taking us for rides in their race cars, and literally their PR guy was like, you know, we've got to be good at this. We've hired some of the best people we can, because if we're not good at this, we're going to get laughed out of this. You know, it's sort of like, you know, Ford and Chevy that have been racing for hundreds of years, Honda, Toyota, that have those backgrounds. You can have a bad year. You can have a bad car. Like, they were very mindful. They were like, hey, we have to get this right in basically our first attempt. And I give them a lot of credit for doing that, you know, because it's tough to not have performance in motorsports at all in your background and know that you may not even get there and to take that risk. So I think it's cool. We're seeing it pay off in their cars, in their performance chops. And, you know, as an enthusiast, I'm impressed. I like it when brands go for it. And that's what we're seeing from Kia right now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Hyundai Veloster N, I think, is the biggest step that, you know, the Hyundai Motor Group has made in, as far as performance goes, like in a long time. Like the Stinger was great, the G70 was fantastic, but the Veloster N is, you know, that's a true enthusiast car. And you know, there's going to be the Kona N coming up. I think that thing's probably going to be a riot if they give it the same treatment as the Veloster N. This K5 GT feels like an echelon below, you know, if I were to compare this to AMG, because that seems like the easiest thing to do, like an N is like a 63, and then a GT, as far as the Kia line, is sort of like 43. And that's sort of how I would, you know, rank them as far as those echelons go. And I should also mention that there will be a Hyundai Sonata equivalent to this called the Sonata N line. It's the same engine, same setup, same 2.5 turbo with 8-speed dual clutch. So it'll be interesting. I mean, at that point, it'd almost just be, you know, which do you like that looks better? Which interior do you like more? Because they're pretty much going to be the same underneath. And I think that James out in Portland is going to be driving that Sonata for us soon. So I'd be curious to see what he thinks of this thing.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I think as Hyundai Motor Group has really dialed down on performance and, you know, sort of shared that through both Hyundai and Kia. Every trip I have been on with those two brands recently had a track component, which isn't something you would think about. And, you know, they would draw comparisons to their sort of sibling brand, sometimes like sort of trying to like one up the other, which I think is cool. So we'll see.
Yep.
But let's transition to the Acura MDX, which is Kind of a hard fade here. That's not like either of these two sedans we've been talking about. Very important vehicle for Acura, though. And it's basically a vehicle that is among, you know, the better selling vehicles, crossover. So this is something that's very mainstream, very important. Impressions, what do you think?
Yeah, so, you know, we might think that it's very different from, you know, the performance-ish, you know, slanted GT, but Acura has made performance a bit of a priority with this three-row crossover too, which is sort of weird to say off the top, but, you know, that's the way that Acura is really going these days. You know, you saw them emphasize performance with the RDX, and they really emphasize performance with the TLX. Greg is obviously going to chat about our long-termer right after this, and, you know, some of the good things that I have to say about the MDX also can be said about the TLX, most specifically the SH all-wheel drive system. They're pretty much one and the same, and it's one of the best torque vectoring systems out there. But I think what's really important with this MDX is the design. And this thing, it looks totally different than the outgoing MDX, in that it's riding on a totally new platform, so much with a much longer dash to axle ratio that makes it look, you know, like some of its rear drive competitors, like an Audi Q7, some, you know, similar portions to something like a Lincoln Aviator, but of course with Acura's own design slant on it. And man, it looks really, really good in person. This is honestly one of my favorite looking luxury crossovers from this segment, of course, right now. So they've done that well, and they've also done the interior really well too. This thing no longer looks like it's, you know, from the early 2010s, late 2000s, as it was before with its weird dual touch screen, and then, I don't know, just total mashup of buttons in there. No, it looks modern, it looks luxurious, it looks sporty inside. You know, it's a bit of a tech pantheon, really. It's the first digital instrument cluster from Acura that we've ever seen. And if you don't count the Honda E, it would also be the first as far as Honda and Acura go. Obviously, we don't get that little electric car here. But no, I think that the MDX is a great car to showcase it on. One little Easter egg. I'm not sure if it is an Easter egg, but it's new. It's cool in that when you put it in the sport mode, the tachometer looks just like the S2000's tachometer, in that it arcs across the top in this sort of horizontal half circle. It looks straight out of an S2000. I just thought that was a really cool touch. You know, just sort of a throwback to Honda's performance heyday right there. But you know, you got a little bit more utility. They made the third row usable back there, but before, you know, if you were an adult, like, you wouldn't want to sit back there at all. Now I think, you know, if you have a family, and, you know, even, you know, taller, larger kids, or even an adult, could sit back there comfortably, because it gave it a couple more inches of leg room, a couple more inches of headroom. Overall, just a lot more spacious back there. Now the third row has this really neat little feature. The second row has this really neat little feature that you can fold down the middle seat, and that becomes this massive center console, or completely take the middle seat out, and then you have captain's chairs. So you don't really have to choose from the dealer, like, oh, do I want this, you know, captain's chairs from the factory, or do I want, you know, three across seating? You can have both, because it's super easy to take that center seat out. I did it in about 5 seconds. It's light, and it's a really, really great design, I think. So as far as like a family vehicle goes, you know, I think it's Acura did a good job in the updates here. And as I was saying with the interior, Acura has just made huge strides on interior quality in general with its past few models. I'm sure you've noticed it with our TLX, Greg, but this MDX is the same way, you know, slathered in a bunch of really great leather. The infotainment screen is quick and snappy. You know, it's that interesting and weird touchpad technology that definitely takes a minute to get used to, but I've driven enough Acuras as of late that I'm really starting to get to like that infotainment. I'm still not 100% there, but I have a feeling with some more time in the TLX that I will be more of an advocate of that system.
That's an interesting point. I'm not sure I'm there with you on that infotainment. Yeah. I've been popping in and out of the TLX every couple days, you know, without a commute. You don't drive every day usually.
Yep.
But every time I get in there, I'm just like, oh my gosh, how does this work again? And I found with like cold fingers, it's kind of hard to get that touchpad to like do what I want. So yeah, I'm getting educated. I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever going to get there. And that's why we do long-term tests. We get multiple opinions here. You know, other people like pick these things right up, but man, I don't know. It took me literally like 5 minutes just to go from satellite to FM radio the other day. And I was like, what is happening here? So I would say my issue with it is not that it doesn't work. It's that it's not intuitive. So
yeah. I agree. It's definitely not intuitive. And the first time I tried it like a year ago in the RDX, I was like, what is this madness? It makes no sense at all. But as I keep using it more and more and more Acuras, I'm starting to learn it. And I imagine, you know, if you actually own one of these things, you would learn it, and it'll become more like second nature. But that doesn't mean you have to like it at all. You can still prefer a touchscreen if that's what you like.
That interior sounds brilliant to me, though.
It is.
I actually didn't know that part about how you could move the seats around and sort of configure it how you would like. I think that's something we should see more of in three-row SUVs, because I think with that part of the market really growing, really becoming something people want, it's not necessarily that people want three rows. It's that they like the idea of a larger vehicle, and they might want to have three rows, but they don't want it all of the time. So for some people, that means you essentially have a five-seater or a four-seater SUV, because you're driving with that third row put down. And then if you can sort of move the middle seating around, all the better. Because again, with an SUV crossover, you've got to be able to like move stuff and people, and the circumstances change. You know, if your life is static and you're not, you know, like, you know, your things aren't changing, maybe you go for a sedan or a sports car or something. But one of the reasons you buy a crossover like the MDX is that functionality. So I'm excited, and I'm actually super excited about that S2000 callback. That is like, that puts me right back in, like, I remember driving the S2000 Club Racer back when I started out in this business, bright yellow. Oh man, that car was amazing. You got so much attention in that. The gearbox was amazing. And again, just watching it light up, it was almost like an 80s, like kind of Knight Rider theme, if you will. Like, it was really throwback even 13, 14 years ago. So that's a nice cue. That's like when you see some of these, I'll make a bad comparison, but like if, you know, you watch different sporting events and you're like, oh, that team's wearing throwback jerseys, or the numbers are throwbacks this week. I always like that stuff. So that's good to hear.
Oh yeah. And it's a good, you know, segue to, you know, this car's performance, and that, you know, it's not like, you know, you're boring three-row crossover to drive. That new platform, way more rigid than the outgoing one. It also has Acura's double wishbone suspension design that it's getting into most of its new cars. Same with the TLX. And it handles way better than I figured a 4,500 pound crossover would. And I've driven most of the competitors. This thing feels more light on its feet, feels agile, changes direction quickly. It's tough to really throw it, to actually, you know, get it feeling like the big crossover SUV that it is. You know, that's really great. You know, and I will credit the SHL Wheel Drive for some of that, just because it's torque vectoring ability to really pull you through turns and, you know, send power left to right, front to back, is among the best in the business at that. As far as, you know, actual acceleration forward, still has the 3.5 liter V6 it's had for what feels like forever at this point. It does get a new transmission, has a new 10-speed automatic instead of the 9-speed, which is good because they gave it a lower first gear that helps acceleration. Still doesn't feel fast. It's just feels a little quicker than it did before, which, you know, as far as, you know, just a family workhorse goes, that's all fine and dandy because the Type S is a-coming, and that'll have the 3-liter turbocharged V6 that has 355 horsepower. So if you really want something quick, the Type S is there, and that's in summer. For now, though, you can get this MDX, which I think is a really good car, and value-wise versus some of the others out there, especially if you're looking at a German, you're getting a ton for your money. You know, that you still won't get something as fancy as a 3-row Mercedes-Benz crossover with, you know, just lavish accoutrements and, you know, the type of quality that goes into those cars. But for what it is, you know, fully loaded at just over $61,000, MDXs are really, really good luxury buy, I think.
I think in broad strokes, you've kind of described how I feel so far about the TSX sedan. Again, we introed this last week on the podcast. We're going to try and make our long-termers a little bit more of a regular part of the podcast this year. Just quick hits here. But again, drove it for another week. And look for that introduction. We're going to have that up on the site fairly soon. The words are done. I just need to take some pictures of this car. But it's a beautiful car. And I think some of the things I've been noticing as I've been spending more time in it is I think Acura has done a nice job of sort of cleaning up its interiors a little bit. Obviously, this one, which is an A-spec trim, is gorgeous inside with a lot of the different like racing cues, like the sport steering wheel, which is flat bottomed, and some of the stitching. Obviously, there's some exterior cues as well. But the interior is very nice and it feels very... I would say it just feels more natural than some of the interiors Acura has been rolling out recently. At times, it seemed like the shapes were a little bit too much. The TSX is nice. It's in some ways, it's a cleaner experience than many of the BMWs I've been in lately, like the 5 Series and the 3 Series, where it feels like the insides are like bulging kind of at you. So that's been a pleasant surprise. Like I knew the TSX was a gorgeous car, and I was very excited about it from that perspective, because it's very clear that without even knowing what it is, you would assume it's like a rear-wheel drive car. You know, it's just got that long hood, you know, the dash-to-axle ratio, all the things that you expect, and it's all-wheel drive and front-wheel drive, in fact. But, you know, you get inside, and I think Acura interiors have been a little bit of a mixed bag in recent years, and This is nice. It's a good step forward for them. Yeah, I mean, this one, it's got the 10-speed, which is good. It's got the 2-liter turbo, 272 horsepower. The Type S, which is coming this spring, we haven't heard it's not. We're talking about 355 horsepower. You know, my take is that it's actually good we got the A-spec with just the 2-liter turbo. That this is the car that most people who are going to try and get into it are going to buy. I may be proven wrong on that. I don't know. Maybe people will decide if I want a sports sedan, I want all that power. I don't know. But my thought is this one, ours is coming in at 47 grand, just a little bit over. It really feels right to me, you know? And if, again, we were talking about that average transaction price of 41 grand just in the US, this one for 47 feels like you're getting a lot of car for that price. It feels like a good value. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't driven it that much since we last podcasted, but, you know, the more I've been getting into it, like testing its limits, trying different things about it, noticing different things, you know, it's been like kind of through osmosis, you know, like I've been absorbing it, you know, and again, that interior is something just this week I would highlight as almost a pleasant surprise, you know, I mean, you know, we'll see about that infotainment system, you know, I'll be interested to hear your take on that. And some of the driving modes have been interesting. I've been, you know, comfort is fine. The sport one is fine too. It's been tough, you know, in these conditions to really stretch this car out a little bit to really figure out, hey, what do we have here? So I'm excited in the spring. Maybe we can, you know, at least drive it quicker and not worry about flip it off, you know, the expressway or things like that. But you can feel the performance chops here. The 2-liter turbo is a very good engine. It sounds good. It you know, the revs build quickly. There's nothing in there that's like, oh wow, they really swung and missed on this. It feels good. So yeah, I know you're an Acura guy. I imagine you can't wait to try and get this one and give it some time. But I think we're gonna like this car. I think the question is, you know, is does this sort of live up to like these high aspirational notions we have of it? And I think it will. I think the other good part about this is, you know, the theme so far has been like sedans and their place in the ether. Acura is making no bones. This is their car. You know, the RL is done. The ILX is, you know, I'm going to write this. That's just like a Civic, essentially, with some nicer parts. And I like the Civic better, to be perfectly honest. So if you want like a premium sedan from Acura, this is it. And it's got to be good. And I feel like they're on that path. And I think as we go on, you know, the literal and figurative journey with the TSX this year, I think it's going to prove that out. But we'll see. I mean, that's what a long-term test is all about. So
yeah, no, I'm really excited to spend some good time with this car. Like you said, I'm a bit of an Acura guy. I own a 2001 Integra GSR myself. I've owned it for many, many years. And Acura, you know, I haven't, you know, been feeling that performance love from them for the past, been a while at this point. Besides the NSX, of course. But
yeah,
you know, this is a car that, you know, was engineered and designed from the ground up to please enthusiasts like ourselves. So here we are with the year. I hope and I expect to be pleased. So I will obviously check back in once I steal the car from Greg eventually and see what it's all cracked up to be.
You know what I think is smart about Acura, what they've done with the mission of the TLX, is there's not many sedans in the lineup right now. They're not having this big floaty, like wannabe, like sort of flagship vehicle, sort of like the RL was, that people weren't really buying, that was probably too big, there wasn't a spot for it. They're not trying to go super small, like Mercedes has just decided they're going to take over the A segment with like four different offerings, apparently. And that's fine. That's their strategy. I think they're all pretty good, to be honest, but it does seem a bit much. I digress. But I mean, Acura is like, we're going to put our resources into this car and that's what we're going to do. And you feel it. And I think that's pretty smart. You know, we'll see. They've got a great history. They've got a great motorsports history. The NSX is a brilliant supercar right now. I feel like it's starting to fly below the radar, like that people, I mean, when you like just look at the car enthusiast universe, the NSX isn't something that's popping up, you know, it's like Lambos, Ferraris, R8s. These are the cars that like really pop into everybody's like consciousness. Porsches, I really feel like the NSX is starting to slide off the radar because it's kind of been around for a while. And that's fine. Cars like this tend to have a long gestation period and a long life. They don't need to do much. I drove one last spring and it was brilliant. But again, you got to have more than that. You know, a line I put in my story was like, it's great to have a halo car, but it's got to reflect its light on something. I think that's where the TSX can hopefully make some hay. I was struggling to make connections with this car. Just diving through sort of some of the dusty pages of Acura's history. You know, right now I'm like, it's got to go back to maybe the Legend, which was a great sedan, like 30 years ago, but also was a coupe. You know, then you get into like more recently the TL, which Snyder and I were talking about on the last podcast, just how much we enjoyed driving that car with the manual and the super handling all-wheel drive. The TSX, actually, when I was really trying to like, I guess I had a little too much time on my hands today, the TSX was actually the one that was more of the critical, like, darling. Like, Car and Driver put it on their 10 best 3 straight years. At this point, I'm reading from Wikipedia, but I mean, you know, beyond that, you know, Acura started to drop off. You know, the cars got a little too nebulous. They got a little too, the interiors got a little too not what we're looking for, or not inspired. That's what I'm trying to say here. Like, the inspiration, the ethos started to slip away. So I don't know. I mean, they've been around since 1986. people forget that Acura came before Lexus. You know, yeah. They were the ones that like sort of laid the groundwork for like other kinds of luxury brands. You know, they're doing, without Acura, you know, who knows what happens. So I give them all the credit in the world because they were like the original risk-taking brand that could challenge the Americans and the Germans and say, hey, look at what we can do. Look at this other style of luxury. And it obviously has taken off. And, you know, putting a lot on the shoulders of the TSX, but these are all the things that are going through my mind when I'm driving it, you know? So,
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, and it, looking at history, you know, back when the original NSX launched, 1991, a whole slew of awesome Acuras followed.
Yes.
This new NSX launched, you know, just a few years ago now. Let's hope a whole slew of awesome Acuras follow. I have my fingers crossed. It's looking good so far. So, yeah, we'll see.
Let's talk some news then. Running over to the Nissan Xterra. We had a news hit this week talking about that dealers are demanding that this thing come back. I can't disagree. I think the Xterra, when you talk about identity, it definitely had one. Nissan has a rather aged SUV lineup, and I think the Xterra was a name that frankly had some equity into it. So my take is right away here is yes, they should. Bronco, Hummer, the Wrangler, the 4Runner, Land Cruiser, you name it. The segment is huge, just depending on the size and price point. Nissan's got some credibility there. 100% I think they should do it.
Me too. I mean, when they decided to go, you know, full unibody with the Pathfinder, they lost, you know, obviously a true body on frame off-roader like that. The only one they have now is the Armada, which is huge. You know, to me, an Xterra feels like a perfect 4Runner competitor. That thing, as aged and as ancient as it is, still sells like gangbusters. You know, there's a certain amount of cachet with the Xterra name. You know, I don't look at it with like huge stars in my eyes or anything like that, but it is an off-roading name that people will know and remember, you know, seeing this rugged type of vehicle. And if Nissan can come and, you know, put something that's legitimately good off-road, you know, but with that name on it, it can probably succeed right now. So yeah, just like you said, I am all for bringing some sort of off-road Xterra-like vehicle back into Nissan's lineup.
I think it should be a slam dunk. I think when dealers are saying things like that, they usually know what they're talking about. So let's move along to Lotus, a brand that does not have very many dealers, but they also don't have many cars either. Reading another news hit, it's the new Type 131. And that means the Elise, the Exige, the Evora are all donezo. Check it out on Autoblog. Ronan Glahn, one of our contributors, he wrote this story. He wrote the Xterra story. So do check those out. Great writing here by Ronan. You know, I don't know how I feel about this. I think those names actually have a bit of equity. The strategy makes some sense just because Lotus is so niche that, sure, you don't need three cars. I don't know. This is one of those kind of head scratchers at times where you, like, I really like Lotus, Lotai, Lotuses. You had one this summer, which is kind of neat, but, you know, I don't know. It seems like kind of a bold move, and I kind of wonder if this is a sign that maybe they're in a little bit of trouble. I don't know. You know, what's your take?
I think this is good, but it's also sort of sad. I think it's very sad to see, you know, a name like the Elise go away. Now that has been synonymous with, you know, the most hardcore track vehicle any enthusiast could buy. Obviously, you haven't been able to buy one new in the U.S. for some time now due to our regulations. But regardless, it's still sad to know in the back of my head that Lotus is not going to be selling the Lotus Elise anymore. Obviously, you know, there's the Evora out there. That we can buy, which, as you alluded to, I drove this summer and is a brilliant, brilliant driver's car. So that's also sad to be going away. But I think the light that we can see in this is that this is going to be, you know, the new Type 131 is going to be a car that is done in the same vein as the Evora and Elise with the same ethos. It's going to be a super lightweight sports car. The reports claim that there's not going to be any kind of electrification. I can pretty much guarantee you that there's going to be a manual transmission available. There'll probably be some sort of automatic as well. If they're smart, there'll be a dual clutch, super quick, fast shifting automatic to maybe increase sales. But you know, all signs point to this being a very, very good sports car. And at the end of Ronan's story, I think you know, it is more great news for us is that it will be sold in North America. So we haven't been able to buy the Elise for some time now. So you know, you can't be too sad about that one dying, other than its heritage. And now here's a new Lotus coming to us. That hasn't happened in a long time. I think the Evora was back in 2009, 2010. I'm pretty pumped about this. You know, the only other car that Lotus has said that is even coming is the Eviha, which is the, you know, super crazy electric hypercar. And this Type 131 looks totally different than that. You know, hopefully it's in the $100,000-ish dollar price range, just like the Evora. You can compare it to like a Cayman GT4 or cars of that ilk. I am super pumped to see what Lotus can do. You know, hopefully it'll be a little more modern. Won't have an Alpine head unit in it. It looks straight from the local Radio Shack. This is good news as far as I'm concerned. Even if I am a little sad to see those nameplates go away.
I was at the Paris Motor Show in either 2010 or 12, and Lotus rolled out literally everything. They were going to do like a new Esprit. They had all these concepts, and then none of them happened. So I'm always a little cynical about, well, are they ever going to pull this thing off that they say they're going to do? But I hope they do. I am someone who really likes seeing a lot of brands exist. And I feel like it's great for enthusiasts, particularly because generally when you're like a connoisseur of something like we are of cars, we like to have choices. You sometimes like to play from the bottom of the deck. You know, it's like you ask a watch person, what are they like? And they'll tell you some brand you'd never heard of. And you're like, okay, sure. And I feel like a brand like Lotus, I mean, they're obviously famous, historic, but most people, let's be honest, probably don't know who they are outside of like the auto blog type of person. So I like to see that a brand like this can survive. I think it's a good thing. And I think we'll see, you know, I mean, I hate to see these names going away, but we'll see what's next. And that's all the time we have this week of the auto blog podcast. Thanks for joining me, Zach. What are you driving this week?
I'm actually still in this Kia K5 GT, but I'm going to be driving a Nissan Maxima 40th anniversary edition here very soon. So I will report back on that dinosaur. I am semi-excited just because it is the 40th anniversary edition. We'll see. It's sedan time over here.
Sedan time over here too, the TSX. I'm going to keep that for at least a couple more weeks. Got another couple story ideas. At least one I want to get out. I've got to obsess over the design of this car. So more on that to come in the coming weeks. Send us your Spend My Monies or any questions you have. We love doing mailbags. That's podcast@autoblog.com. Be safe out there. We'll see you next week.